Welcome back to National Defense. Randy Miller along with Jerry Newberry. And, you know, Jerry, it seems like every week or so we talk about, this kind of a thing, traumatic brain injury, different types of injuries that are suffered. And again, this week, we've got this story and a great person to talk to.
Right. Traumatic brain injury, TBI, is it's not unique with the people serving in the wars today, but the number of injuries, of acute injuries, has risen so dramatically because of IEDs.
Right.
And it's something that we really need to help educate the public on. So many of our troops, and we'll let our guest explain it all. But
yeah, Dr. Lou French is with us, Walter Reed Army Medical Center. Dr. French, thanks for being on with us.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
First of all, can you give us a kind of an overview of what constitutes TBI?
Sure. Let me just sort of preface my remarks by saying that some of your comments around TBI being an important issue is really true, and it's an important issue for society overall, and I think for the military in particular. One of the things that it's important to remember is that if you look at society as a whole, it's largely young men that are at greatest risk for suffering concussion or mild traumatic brain injury or brain injuries of all sorts. And of course, that's what largely makes up a large part of the military. And so there's an inherent risk in this population. And then you add on to that the associated dangers of rigorous training and combat and other things, too, and you see a much elevated risk in this population overall. That being said, let me talk a little bit about sort of what brain injury is. And I've used the term both mild traumatic brain injury and concussion in my remarks so far. And excuse me. And you can actually use those two terms synonymously, and people use them interchangeably, and they really are the same. It depends on what group you're talking to and that sort of thing about. Different groups understand those terms in different ways, but they really are the same. But brain injury more generally, whether we're talking about at the milder end of the spectrum or all the way at the most severe end of the spectrum, is what it means is that the brain has had some change in functioning related to a blow to the head. And that blow to the head can be an object that strikes the head. It can be the head striking an object. There can be a penetrating brain injury where something like a bullet or a metallic fragment can pass through the skull and enter the brain. And all of those types of injuries can potentially cause some change in the way the brain functions. And the way we usually see that change is through some alteration or loss of consciousness. So a person gets knocked out, for example, and really that's the way we classify how severe a brain injury is by how long things like that loss of consciousness is. And so if people have a relatively brief loss of consciousness, say 15 minutes or less, we consider that to be a mild traumatic brain injury. If it's, a little less than, say, up to a day or so, that's a moderate traumatic brain injury. And people that are unconscious or in a coma for a more extended period of time, of, say, over a day, we call that severe brain injury. Now, loss of consciousness is not the only marker of brain injury, because other times people can have damage to their brain that we can see on a scan of one sort or another, or they can have a simple alteration in consciousness, and that's really the minimum threshold for a TBI. It's not required to meet the definition that somebody get knocked out. But
what do you mean, simple alteration, like someone getting their bell rung?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So somebody could get a blow to the head, and they could have a feeling of being confused and not really having a good sense of what's going on around them being dazed for a few moments. And you know, you hear stories all the time about professional football players or hockey players, for example, who may get a good blow to the head, and you talk to them the next day and they say they don't remember the rest of the game. And that's an example of an alteration of consciousness or post-traumatic amnesia.
Well, and Dr. French, I had a question about that kind of an injury. You know, obviously in sports, when that occurs, players generally sat down for a few games or a few weeks or whatever. In the military, a lot of times you don't have that luxury. And what is the procedure there when that's the diagnosis?
Sure, that's true. And certainly if an injury like that happens stateside, things are a bit different than if it happens in a deployed environment.
Right.
You know, certainly for a decade or so, many, certainly professional sports teams, college sports teams, had guidelines about when you pull a player. And in the military, those guidelines weren't really put into place about battlefield management until just a few years ago. I think the docs on the field were doing all the right things in terms of making judgments about it, but there wasn't standardized policy about that until just a few years ago. The challenge is, and when we wrote that policy, and we got together really all the experts, and we brought together both sports medicine people and TBI experts, and we brought in operational people too, because we realized that the guidelines have to be modified depending on the combat environment, and certainly you don't always have the luxury to say medically evacuate someone when you might want or pull them from the fight when you might need to, given operational demands. So it's a bit more complex in the military. Nonetheless, there's a recognition, I think, both among medical professionals and among the troop commanders, that it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do in terms of, you know, doing well by the service members. But it's also the right thing to do in terms of making sure that people are you know, maximally able to engage in combat. We know that, for example, mild traumatic brain injury can result in slowed reaction times, even if it's just for a brief period of time. Slowed reaction times on the battlefield could be the kind of thing that could have operational significance, put other people at risk, and that sort of thing. So the commanders are very aware of the needs for this, and the awareness has really greatly increased in the last couple of years.
So when a troop is out in the field, say there's an explosion, and the concussion, you know, we'll go back to the bell ringing thing a little bit dazed, a little bit confused for a few minutes, shakes it off, you know, with the attitude, okay, I got to suck it up and, you know, I'm okay. What's the danger in that kind of attitude?
Well, the reality is that people aren't always the best judge of how they're doing. And in the military, and we see it in professional sports, and college sports, high school sports even too, that people are dedicated to what they're doing. And they want to get back into the fight. They're not eager, or the game, and they're not eager to be pulled from things. And so they don't always give the most accurate representation of how they're really doing, because they're thinking about what their mission is or what the other people around them might need. So it's important that there be awareness, both among the medical professionals, among the troop commanders, to flag somebody when there might be concern about something like this. And if they're in a serious incident where they might have gotten a blow to their head, that somebody do at least a basic screen to see whether something more in-depth maybe need to be done.
Okay, there's a greater awareness with commanders, and certainly to some degree among the soldiers. Let's talk about treatment of TBI, where we're at with that, how far we've come, et cetera.
Yeah, so if we're talking about at the more severe end of the spectrum, a penetrating brain injury or a severe traumatic brain injury, that's the kind of thing that there have been standard guidelines in place for a while. And the military treats these things with the same kind of standards that are done in the civilian community. And as a matter of fact, the military does on the battlefield can do a better job than the civilian community can to some degree, because there's emergency care sometimes closer than you would be able to get in the civilian community, especially if you were in a more rural area. But for people at the milder end of the spectrum, the typical course of mild traumatic brain injury and really all traumatic brain injury is a move towards improvement. In mild traumatic brain injury, the vast majority of individuals that get concussed ultimately have no lasting consequences of that. And over the course of days, weeks, potentially months, they may be symptomatic. And those symptoms may have caused some difficulties, discomfort. They could range from some cognitive slowing, some attentional problems, some memory difficulties, but may also manifest themselves by more physical symptoms, including dizziness, headache, sleep problems, that sort of thing. All of those can cause distress for people. Now, a lot of times we know that some of the best treatment can be a very simple kind of intervention. By simple interventions, I mean doing a thorough evaluation with someone to look at all the things that the symptoms they're having and what might be going on to make sure that there's not something more serious happening. But once you determine that it's been a mild TBI or concussion, finding out what their symptoms are, tracking them over time, giving people some education around what's happened to them and the symptoms they're experiencing and what the expected course of recovery is. And then giving them some rest if possible, trying to minimize some of their exertion. We know that physical exertion over the short period of time can actually make symptoms worse. So trying to minimize some of their exertion and give them some rest and things like that. There is a potential risk for a more serious consequence if someone gets a second blow to the head in a relatively short period of time after the first. So there's awareness that if possible, you might want to remove someone from activities that could potentially put them at greater risk to get another blow to the head or another concussion.
Dr. French, now you talked about on the battlefield where the accident occurs, and are there better trained personnel now than ever before in terms of recognizing a TBI and diagnosing it quickly? Because I know that's and you talked about the emergency care needed for that, but are the troop doctors, are they better prepared to diagnose this now?
Yes, on many different levels. There are some standardized educational modules for everyone in the military now about basic issues around deployment-related conditions, including TBI, including stress symptoms, other kinds of things that everyone gets now. So that's increased some general awareness. Deploying providers, medical providers, are given specific instruction in the use of some screening tools, especially people that might most likely come into contact with these, some emergency medicine people, psychologists, psychiatrists, other people that may be involved in some of these assessments, and given instruction on how to use some of the basic screening tools and what the clinical practice guidelines are for management in theater. To just sort of touch on things, post-acutely, I'm at Walter Reed, as you mentioned, and we tend to get people fairly quickly after injuries, but they're generally at the more severe end of the spectrum.
Right.
Now, we do see people with mild TBI. That usually is not the reason why they were medically evacuated and brought to us. They may have mild TBI in the context of other more serious injuries, including a limb loss or a wound to their chest or abdomen or other kinds of things. It's important in those circumstances that we really understand all the conditions that are contributing to a person doing well or not doing well. And that would include the pain that they're facing, potentially the stress related to the context of the injury that they got, emotional aspects of this, and things like a mild TBI. Potentially these things can interact to cause a person to heal less well. And so we're very attentive about those things. And even a mild TBI in that context, we want to make sure has gotten addressed.
Well, and it's such an important topic, and we really appreciate your viewpoint on that, Dr. French. Thank you so much for being with us, and thanks for your service.
Thanks very much for having me.
We'll be right back here on the National Defense.
You've faced the struggles of war, and now you may be confronted with different daily struggles. This can lead to depression and thoughts of suicide. Just as you were there for your buddies, the VFW is here for you and to let you know you are important, you are needed, you are loved. There is hope. There will be a tomorrow. The VFW is here for you any place, anytime you need us. Don't take your life for granted. Call the Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK.
Big Brothers Big Sisters presents 100 Years of Helping Kids.
Today, Kyle and his big brother Justin,
hello,
hi,
are here to share some stuff we've learned.
With kids, it's not always what you say, but how you say it.
Hey Kyle, you want to go to a foreign film festival?
Nah, that's boring.
Okay.
Hey Kyle, you want to go to a foreign film festival?
Yeah, that's a great idea.
From time to time, a kid may double dare you.
Wow, that looks heavy. Bet you can't lift it.
Are you serious?
I double dare you.
Okay.
See? I told you! Uh-oh.
Moments like these happen every day.
Making a big difference in the life of a child. To find out the many ways you can help support kids in your community, call 1-888-412-BIGS or go to BigBrothersBigSisters.org.
That's BigBrothersBigSisters.org.
This message brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
Until next time.